Julia White. Welcome to Tea Time.
It's hard for me to be like super.
Because my podcast voice. Welcome to Tea Time.
Welcome to Tea Time, Julia.
Yeah, that's not the way you were talking to me earlier.
I know.
She puts on her own white voice when the call comes
hilarious. A white woman with a white voice that she doesn't use.
You guys, I already feel the bullying starting.
It's not a bullying.
I mean, lovingly joking
it's not
on
bullying.
Me. Okay, whatever. Anyway, Julia, here's the deal. The three of us have something in common.
What?
The three of us have something major in common.
Yeah, we do.
We all spent a significant amount of time on the Warner Brothers lot.
Yeah.
As young people.
Yes.
Let's talk about it.
You
know what else you and I have in common?
What?
The basketball court.
Yes.
Clooney.
You played on the court?
Yes. Quite often.
When?
All the time. And I actually used to come to tapings of Family Matters almost once a week. Because my father worked at the studio, and that was his world. Anyway, let's talk about it.
I've been ambushed.
Show up your tat. Oh, yeah. Like, she's real serious about Warner
Brothers.
You have
a Warner Brothers tat.
This is in honor of my dad.
And they pay me more money, and I don't even have one of those.
You should have. I can't even find the place to put it on camera, but yeah.
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 So I filmed Hang with Mr. Cooper on stage 9.
And you were adorable.
Thank you, friend. Mm-hmm. And then right across the way, you filmed on what stage?
Stage 10
right across.
Yeah.
10. And then my wife, a little pumpkin,
wasn't on a stage.
She was on all the stages. She used to ride the golf cart around with her dad and go to every single show.
What did your dad do?
My dad was the VP of Warner TV from 19
Who your daddy?
I know, right? It was
weird. I knew all them motherfuckers. Who your daddy?
Yeah, his name was Gregory Mayday.
We'll show you a picture after.
And do you know Alan Horn?
Of course I know Alan Horn.
Okay, and Barry Meyer.
Yeah.
So those two guys were my dad's boss.
Okay.
And then he was right in that mix. But yes, as a kid, I would be all over the lot. I learned to drive on the Warner Brothers lot. I would go to Western Town regularly. But coming to Family Matters was one of my favorite things. I loved it. I think it's actually where I discovered my claustrophobia.
Here we go. Triggers.
Because you know when you guys would film, it was red light, right?
Yeah.
And then there was the door you'd open, and then there was a second door. Mm-hmm. And then if you were stuck in between,
you're stuck for a whole take.
That, I think at like the age of 6, 7, whatever it was, I started to develop my claustrophobia.
That is funny. Oh my gosh, I forget about that little compartment between the big door and the inside door.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That freaked me out. So the red light, and then also you like can't scream because you have to be quiet. It just felt like so much pressure, and I was just whatever, stressed.
No screaming during a taping.
No, you can't scream.
The 90s, you're taping Family Matters. Mm-hmm. What's the smell that you remember from a set from
the
that period?
Smell. Wow. Ah. The smell. I can't believe I'm admitting this. I don't really have a strong sense of smell.
Oh, you lost it?
I don't.
You have long COVID?
I don't have long COVID.
Since he was 12.
Wow. Yeah, no, I can't even really recall smell.
Okay.
On the set. What made you ask that question?
Because I remember the smell of sawdust, of newly cut wood.
Ooh.
You remember that?
Okay. I was actually going to say catwalk wood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
every time
specific.
I go on a set, that's what I smell on a real set. Nowadays, they buy warehouses.
The catwalks are the areas that you walk above, and there's so much work going on up there.
That's where they build the lights.
So I'm sure with the shuffling of the shoes and just anything that the dust or whatever that's coming down from the catwalks, that's what's creating that smell, mm-hmm. though.
That smell. That's our childhood smell.
Oh, my gosh.
Julia, did you ever eat at the commissary?
I loved eating at the Warner Brothers dining room.
Ooh. Oh, fancy.
Yeah. The commissary I didn't like so much.
I fucked with the commissary.
I loved the commissary.
It was someplace you would walk down to and kick it, like waiting for the show to start.
Mm.
But I never really liked eating. I actually talked about it in a book. We had our adults went really hard for food in one particular season. And we thought they were going hard for more. And so when they came out, they were real like, yeah, we done straightened out this set. And the big thing that we could see as kids that we got out of it was Aunt Kizzy's Kitchen.
Hilarious.
So they had this big meeting, the adults and the producers and everything. And the kids are all wondering what's going to get said. And, you know, the only thing that came of it was Aunt Kizzy's Kitchen, more soul food on a Friday night. So we started eating soul food every tape night.
Oh, wow.
And that started putting everybody to sleep.
I bet. It's heavy.
So after like the first couple scenes, people are dragging. People sitting like this, you know, waiting for notes in between scenes and stuff, right? So it was like, it didn't take long before cats were like, man, don't go up in there. Like that, you have a bad show if you go up in there and eat all that damn chicken. Some mother pork chops.
Raven would be all the way up there just stuffing her face.
Right? So it was like cafeteria food was only like a notch below the soul food we'd already ditched.
Yeah.
My thing was to go to City Walk. City Walk was still new and fresh, and we had just gotten cars. So, you know, I always say that the family shows don't really take off until the kids get cars.
There you go.
When the kids get cars,
preach.
We got a new freedom now.
Yep. Do you guys remember the restaurant across the street from Warner Brothers? Lot? It was called Piglets.
Yeah. Piglets. I don't remember Piglets.
It was a sandwich shop across the street, on the way to Priscilla's.
Okay. Oh, damn! You was doing a lot more eating off the set.
I know. She was all the way.
Anyway,
Papu's. That was
Papu's. Oh my God.
Papu's was over in Toluca Lake, and it was a hot dog situation. And if my dad ever wanted to venture, if he didn't go to Smokehouse, then we would go to Papu's. And
I
if we
like
didn't
Smokehouse,
I mean, it's a vibe.
Mine was the sushi spot on Riverside.
Ooh.
Is it Sushi Yuzu?
Yes.
She's like,
I've been going there forever. Yeah. That was the spot. You get the Sushi Yuzu.
They used to give you pineapple with whipped cream on top. Yeah. Oh, so good. I have a question. God. You kind of brought up cars. Jaleel, 15, 16 years old, gets his license. What's the car you weren't allowed to get?
Oh, yeah. My mom did me dirty.
Okay.
She did me ferociously dirty. I drove my dad's car, and it was just an Acura Legend four-door sedan.
Color?
Charcoal.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't embarrassing, but, you know, aluminum, you know, wheels, nothing.
Yeah.
It was a car that when I'll never forget pulling up to the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Oh, gosh.
And this, you know, presumably rich, I don't even want to say what her race is, just presumably rich lady comes up to me and she wants to take a picture. And as soon as I pulled into valet, and then she looks at my car and she goes, is this your car? And I'm like, 18,
you gave her away.
Yeah,
you gave her away with it. Is this your car? She looked exactly like me. Understood.
I was like, yeah. And she's just like, you should really upgrade. This is not your image. And it was like, you know. So I think
she was right.
She was correct.
She was correct.
But you know, those are the things also that can start to throw your values out of whack.
1,000%.
You know what I'm saying? Because when you're 17, 18 years old, and some lady comes up to you treating you like a star at first, and then you know sideswipes you with a comment like that on her way out after she's gotten what she wanted, you know, it stings a little bit.
Yeah.
And you don't know how to put into proper context, like, I'm comfortable in my skin, don't worry about what I'm driving, lady. You know what I'm saying? It's like you don't know how to do that.
And, but then when you got your car,
my first car was a Range Rover LWB.
That fits your image.
I want to make this a whole circle or like a full circle moment for you. As another white person who's going to talk to you right now,
do you think white people don't normally talk to me?
No, I'm taking
it. They talk to me a lot.
I'm taking it back to this white woman who was saying that wasn't your image. I'm trying to make a full circle moment where I, as a white person, can say, I just want to get it out of the way, that I had very few childhood shows that impacted me as much as Family Matters did. And also your character specifically. I was fucking obsessed with Urkel to the point where I would walk around and do all the things. I learned how to laugh snort because of Urkel. Did I do that? I asked for cheese on a regular. My parents were like, shut up.
You asked for extra cheese because of me.
Yes. Literally, I just want to get my fangirl moment out of the way for 2 seconds because it's for real.
Thank you.
I don't know if you've looked over here.
I see him over there.
That was my favorite doll. Like, to the point where it had to be pried away from me. Just... thank you, I guess.
Thank you, literally. Because of you, she married a black person, and here I am.
I broke that barrier down for you.
Yes. You helped me.
And you were able to see Raven.
Yes.
It was because of me she was able to see.
It was Raven. Your black manhood that got me to Raven's black manhood. And I just want to thank you so much for it.
Okay. Y'all mess.
Anyway, I was trying to do a real clean, like, is that your image? And like make it whatever. It didn't work. But you get the point.
I appreciate the kudos, though.
Yeah. No, very much so. Yeah.
One of the first, if not the first, black child star to survive, to make it out alive, to have what you had and have still, to have a brand, to be in this industry in a way that I can feel you before you walk in a room.
Yeah.
The power and energy, the power that you yield as a star child that was on classic black sitcom television that broke barriers.
And such a truly profound character. Like, it's not even that. I think that Urkel was really.
Yeah, but that's because kudos to the writer. But it's to the actor who made that come alive.
Clearly.
And that was him. So my question is, what's the vice?
What do you mean, what's the vice?
That's a lot of pressure on your shoulders, bruh.
No, ain't no pressure on my
shoulders.
Come
on now. I know a little bit of myself.
Dang.
Are you the person who sees people without having to be explained who they are when you walk in a room? Are you the person who just doesn't walk in a room and say, you know what? I know exactly what's going on here. Are you not moved by things in the industry anymore? What's the outcome?
Well, first of all, the thing that I've done, the personal work that I've done, is I have no problems accepting that my entire legacy was an accident. As far as the business is concerned, it wasn't an accident in my life. I'm kind of getting why God did it now. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, because I would have dropped out of the business at age 12, not having any ambitions to become a star. My family didn't know how to become a star. They had nobody was interested in becoming a star. Stars were like Magic Johnson, Eddie Murphy, and Denzel Washington. My mom just wanted me to make money to go to college. So, you know, the thing that I forgive her for, and I praise her for, is that my mom actually manifested every single thing she could envision for me. And I talk about that in the book. And it was up to me at some point to be like, but mom, that's not enough. You didn't ask for enough. I'll take it from here. Now, that's when you have to grow into manhood and stop getting pushed around with this idea that you need to stay in a child's place. That probably lasted for far too long.
Welcome.
But I just try not to be jaded. Like, I wake up every day to not be jaded. It's like even when I did your show, right? And it ended up turning into a few episodes.
Yeah.
But my initial drive to do your show was, it was really a mea culpa between me and another woman, Yunetta.
Yes. Yunetta Boone was an executive producer of Raven's Home for a couple of seasons. Rest in peace.
Yunetta had kind of done me dirty previously. Oh, wow. And then we ended up living in the same building.
Hilarious.
And I never let her, I never held it against her. So when she would pass me in the parking lot or whatever, and, you know, I think her career took some twists and turns that were unexpected too, she would be like, how'd you live? And it was like, that's the girl that did me dirty though when I auditioned for that. Okay, whatever. But I just would still return like, what's up, Yunetta? Just kept it cool. And at this point, I'm a father and I got my daughter, so she's even looking at me different, right? And so when the call came for me to do your show, and it was really Yunetta going out of her way, being like, I want you on the show. The other deciding factor was my daughter was loving your show. So between Yunetta, this woman who's been waving at me, who really didn't have no business waving at me, going out of her way to extend that offer, may she rest in peace. It blew me away when she passed, because I was like, holy smokes. It was like somehow you were meant to make that right with me somehow before you left this earth.
She used that show to set a lot of things right.
Right? It was weird. It was like that. So, you know, like she was fixing a lot of her karma.
Yeah, she was.
With that show, with your show. And then she passed. Yeah. Here's somebody like, I haven't had a lot of people pass away in my life that are extremely close to me. Mm-hmm. But I've had people pass away that felt symbolic somehow. Yeah. Like, whoa. Like Jonathan Brandis I talk about in the book. And Yunetta was one of those people. Mm-hmm. But my daughter, that was the first set. Yours was the first set that I was able to bring my daughter to.
Aww.
And so my daughter was at an age where I was proud to just let her see what daddy does. Mm-hmm. And you guys treated me like
on a safe set.
Yeah. You guys treated me like a prince. So it wasn't like I was getting dirt kicked on me or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, she could feel that her daddy was welcome here. And, you know, you could sit at Video Village and here's a chair for you and take pictures with the cast and everybody's amazing. Willing. And so that was the first job where I figured out my daughter really had to figure out what I do for a living in person. She'd seen the show and people asking for pictures, but now she gets to come to set.
That was actually the first show where he ran over the keys to his Tesla.
Oh, man.
And broke his Tesla key. I think that was also the first show. That was also a first.
I can't stand you. I can't stand you.
What did you do, Julia?
I can't stand you. Yeah. I think I had an incident with my car.
Oh, no, I know he
sounds
had an incident
like it.
With
sounds like
car.
You ran over a key.
I'll let you recount it because I do a better job of forgetting things that were traumatic or bad or dumb experiences. So, what did I do? But it's coming back to me as you bring it up.
Oh, I'll definitely bring it up. He was trying to leave and he could not find his key. He's like, I can't find it. Then he looked underneath that wheel. And the key was under the car. Now, here's the deal. With
Thank
the
God
Tesla,
it wasn't like your daughter or an animal, because people have done that.
This is very true.
I'd take a key.
But the Tesla key, first of all, is expensive. Yeah. It's real expensive.
Yeah, that's obvious.
Two, I don't know if you had, I think you had the phone app, but it was just interesting because.
How did it get down there, though?
How did it get down
there? You probably fell out of your pocket.
No, it's weird. Not with the Tesla key. You normally have it in the hand, and it was just smashed.
No. Did someone valet it?
That's what happened. Okay, so valet.
Let's blame it on the valet. Yeah.
Valet puts your key
on the tire.
Now it's all rushing back. Valet puts your key on the tire.
Oh, and so the Tesla was open and able to turn on because key was in close proximity.
Bingo.
Yep.
And so the key fell down behind the car.
Yeah.
Boom.
And
rolled right over the side.
Ruined his key to the car. First for everything.
Yeah.
There you go. Well,
that was kind of you to bring that up on your podcast.
I was going
to
say
my forgetfulness and my old age.
This is what I'm here for.
Well, I was going to say I just love that your daughter got such a lovely introduction into that part of your life, and that your set made him feel so welcome.
I know. We love the kids. Does go ahead, babe.
Oh no, I was going to take it back to you and your 12-year-old self, and you were you acting. And your mom's manifestation of this. So did you, how old were you when you started acting?
Well, I started acting at 3.
At 3. And so similar to you. So your mom, that was her vision for you?
No.
No.
Asian lady who ran my preschool said, he's funny and I like the shape of his afro.
Hilarious, wow. Not the afro.
And he should be on TV. And at the time, we didn't really have many examples of me on TV. But that led to an acting school, which was not much of a transition spot, but the luck of that was an agent who would go on to become the most successful child agent in the game. She Iris Burton, she had everybody, picked me as one of the kids. And normally she didn't pick them that young, but I could read. So since I could read copy, I was able to go on auditions and they would write the songs or whatever the lyrics were on big boards on easels in the audition room. I could walk right in. Okay, want me to say that? Done. It was like, oh, we love his afro. This is great. And the little black boy can read. So that's
it. Book him.
And so done, book him. Book him.
So you also said, though, that your family had no real reference of
Zero.
Stardom, celebrity. So when you skyrocket, how does the family react?
That to me is the show. You know, that to me, my parents made every cliche middle class family mistake, you know, loaning money to family members and, you know, my dad just navigating work, you know, it really get to the point where, you know, we didn't even want him to tell people at his job, you know, who his son was. Now you're running into jealousy with your bosses. My mom was an adequate manager, but she never leaned into management. So she didn't take the the Judy Savage route and start managing other kids and at large. And she could have. Oh, she could have. She could have had a line out her door. I don't think that was for her. Mm. She didn't have the shark
personality
mm-hmm. and business. She wanted to just help people, quite frankly. And she got her feelings hurt, really, actually, with certain other child actors at the time, mothers side-saddling up to her for information about contracts or whatever. And she helped them to the best of their ability. And then when those people would pop, they would almost kind of like dismiss her as if like, thanks for the leg up and we're out. That kind of hurt her feelings a lot. And I'm not going to throw those people under the bus, but it's like, your mama did my mama really jacked up and y'all had an effed up contract and she helped you fix it. And,
You have all these stories. You're obviously exposing a lot in your book that's out right now called Grown Up Urkel. Yeah. We have the same publisher. I'm writing a book too. And I want to ask this.
Shout out to Yadon. No?
Shout out to Yadon.
Yadon is real.
Yadon is real.
Yadon's really cool.
He's super cool, dude.
I have a weird question. I know when I was growing up, I knew that I was going to write a book about my experience. Mm-hmm. I knew that what I went through.
I did too.
You did. You did too.
Yeah, I did.
Like what age?
I've been a writer though since I was like 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. But I'll just admit it, like I've been a frustrated writer. I wrote 2 episodes of Family Matters that were the highest rated episodes of each respective season. Mm-hmm. And that high for me was incredible. I remember the first episode was Grandmama. We had Larry Johnson on the show, who used to play the Grandmama character in his Converse commercials. And, you know, the young producer in me kicked in quick, and I called my contact at the NBA. I got Larry Johnson on the phone. I went to Foot Action myself. I got the poster. Wow. I took it to our writer's room. I took my outline, and then David Duclan, our executive producer, was so supportive. But I give you the steps because basically I got an idea in, like, August while we were shooting, and we had shot the show in 7 weeks and it was on for November sweeps and it was the highest rated episode that season. So that's a breakneck pace to get anything on television, even back then. So I was just like, I thought this is the way the world worked. So I did it again the next season. Now I'm like, okay, cool. I'm gonna go to film school and we just gonna write these scripts. And, you know, I remember writing my first feature length script. My goal was to make sure I did it before I graduated from high school. And I did. I wrote my first script and I sent it over to William Morris, who was repping me at the time. And I didn't understand the game of coverage. This is going downstairs to some intern level people who, you know, really probably resent being told to even read this over the 100%. Weekend. So, you know, you're getting graded harshly, pass, accept, you know, and you're thinking this is coming from someone of some importance. Bottom line is, once the show was over, I say in the book, my life began because now I started to learn about human nature. Yeah. Now people can start treating you the way they really feel about you. Mm. And I think it's one of the biggest proverbs of show business is, unfortunately, a lot of the interaction in show business is based on the idea of I'll love you for as long as I need you. And that's what I love about Raven so much, just on a human level. She's a sassy Sag, and I know what she is.
Hilarious.
Thank you.
But she's as loyal as a one-eyed dog. And and so anytime...
She hates it. She's like, I'm sorry to interrupt you. She goes like this. Cool. She'll be like,
I don't hate your loyalty.
You hate it. I literally would like, I have to go to this person. I knew her in middle school. She was like, you never talked to her. How do you... You only knew her in middle school. I'm like, it doesn't matter.
No, you know what I don't... Matter. You know what I don't like? I'll correct it. I love your loyalty. I think that her loyalty is beautiful. Mm. What I have an issue with is actually, maybe you'll understand part of this, the people-pleasing element that comes from the history of being a person who had to walk in the room and make everyone laugh, who had to always be happy. I sometimes see you... I sometimes see you saying, oh, I have to go take care of this person. This is what I think the subtext is what you're saying.
I love a subtext.
I have to go, because the context is like, oh, I've known this person since I was 13. I have to show up. But the subtext to me is I feel obligated to put on a happy face and show up for this person because if I don't, someone might fill in the blank. And that is the issue.
Because if I don't and I need them, I can be like, yo, I came out. I need you to come out.
Yeah, but you're not going to need them. So I think that
you don't know.
But I think it comes from that place in you. Sometimes, oftentimes, at least when I like to call you out on it, is the little girl, the little girl who was told you had to, you know, razzle dazzle all the time.
I think she's right.
Yeah. First of all, both of y'all can sit on the other side.
I would disagree. I will say this to just sum up that portion of our conversation. I don't think being loyal to the wrong people makes you a better person.
Amen.
And period. And that's definitely something that comes from a place of people telling us. You know, people ask me all the time, "How is your daughter going to get in the business?" You know, they say, my response was, "I know my daughter. She doesn't do much on cue." Now that would only make another child performer and laugh, because it's like, we can't do nothing with you. You don't do nothing.
You gonna sit over there. You gonna sit over there. You gonna bring me some coffee when you want to.
It's like, she's destined for a greatness of her own, but she don't do much on cue. So, you know, that's a problem. But because we did everything on cue, because we were always in people please mode, you know, be a trooper, you know, stay later than what the laws say you should.
You're sick. It's okay. Take this zinc and magnesium and get back on stage.
I think that extends, though, to the relationships, and you calling her out, you calling me out on it a little bit, too.
That's the point. You know? That was my point, though. I'm calling both of you out. But
don't make me call you out.
You can call me out. I'm fine.
Okay. Can we go to commercial break while they fight? That would be awesome.
The on cue ness for you, right? So you're 3 years old. You're obviously a very smart 3 year old who can read, but how was that enforced in your life at that age?
Well, I think my mom actually reinforced some of the taking advantage of me, because she was equally determined to keep me in a child's place.
That's where the money is.
So, you know, she was heralded by everybody. But man, you just keep such a close eye on him, and you don't let him get away with anything. And I think she enjoyed the praise of that,
of course,
too.
Yeah.
So then sometimes I would go to my dressing room or whatever, and she'd be like, you know, I heard some things from the ladies in the wardrobe, not wardrobe, but ladies in the makeup room, right? And I couldn't stand the makeup room. I couldn't, because the makeup room was highly dominated by the adult females on our show. And so it really kind of turned into a beauty salon.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of their conversation was extremely gossipy. And so I couldn't tell my mom, like, Mom, I've been here 5 days or 4 days rehearsing this show. I know what's going on with this show. If those women feel like they can get away with saying certain things in there, they're getting away with it, because basically those are adult women having a conversation that kids don't need to be around.
Right.
But now you're holding me to the standard of what they think of me.
Yeah.
And it was like, it probably took till about, I don't know, 5 or 6 seasons before I even would wrap my head around that. I wouldn't even go to the, I was like, wait a minute. So I actually have the power to tell the makeup person to come do me in my dressing room?
Wow.
Oh, I'm not even going up in there. They're telling to sit me down after. Now, to some people, that's going to come off cocky. Even the way I'm saying it right now, like, oh, look at him. He's feeling himself. It's like, No, that was my passive aggressive way of creating a boundary, saying, I don't want to be in there, you know, hearing that nonsense. Just a lot of peacocking, man. You know, when people, I will say this, man, when people are on shows, it's very important for you to learn who you are when you have a show and when you are when you don't have a
preach! Mm-hmm. Preach, God! Preach!
And you've got to figure out who is the happy medium that you need to be, that can just be on a show or not be on a show.
Let me just interject right now. I want to just say, one of the things, I'm writing a book, but one of the things...
She loves to say that. I'm writing a book and it's in the book.
It's in the book. Writing a book. We get it.
Everything's in the book.
Everything. So let me explain to you. I love working. Love it. I'm a nicer person when I work.
Me too.
I'm just nicer.
You are.
But then...
you are.
But then when I'm not working, I'm so relieved that I have a day to not have to get up and work. It's weird. Like, even now, I haven't been on a television show in a while, right? And I love being able to just get up. Oh, we might need to go take an errand. Oh, we might need to do this. Or I might not need to do anything. We are supplementing our time with work because we have a production company and all that stuff. But just the difference.
The routine.
The difference of going to set from 8 to 8 versus the weekend, where all I could do is sleep. when I got old enough, when I was younger, I was not sleeping. But it's so interesting because I am a different person when I'm not working and when I'm not on the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Jahlil that's not, you know, that's not on a show. I'm always working, but not on a show.
Different.
I had to really find a peace with that because people, sadly, really like to sometimes go out of their way to let you know they don't see you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it could be like, you know, I remember I was using a urinal at the LAX and, you know, there's one janitor in here and he's mopping the floor. And he comes over to me while I'm peeing.
Yep.
And is like, hey, man, is that you?
No boundaries.
I hope you turned around like this. Yes. I hope you did it.
It is. I did not. If anything, I'm like, man, don't look at me right now. I mean, it's eyes forward. It's different protocol in the men's room. But you know, for him to be like, I don't see you nowhere on TV, man. What you got coming out, man? And it's like, you know, it's, I can say a lot of things to this man holding his mop. Right. But I'm like, those are the moments where I actually look back and I feel proud of myself for extending some grace because I'm like, he doesn't see the social circles that I see or how inappropriate this is. And at the end of the day, you know what? Maybe he does actually enjoy seeing me on TV, but just doesn't know how to express himself. So I don't need to be negative about it.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's a challenge for us as young people who started off young is so much of our being on the planet is associated with, are you on a show?
Yeah.
And that had to change for me, especially when my daughter arrived. So now my base reality is, does she have what she needs?
Mm.
And now I've added a wife to it, so it's like my second base reality, does she have what she needs?
Mm. I say that about my dog,
right?
and then my wife for sure.
if they got what they need, because my daughter, listen, my daughter's getting expensive. Y'all can slap box after I'm gone. You're not gonna do it while I'm here. Okay, some people are just listening to this. They hugging and kissing and side-eyeing and throwing daggers with each other's eyes right here. All right, it's a hell of a dynamic.
You're okay, Jahlil. You're going to survive.
But
you'll survive this, too.
Yeah, but with my... Let me just throw the mic to you. Y'all messed up my train of thought.
No, your daughter is getting expensive.
Yeah, no, my daughter's getting expensive, man. It's like to watch how, you know, her needs have changed. Mm-hmm. I feel very proud as a father to be meeting her needs here in a city like Los Angeles, because LA is fly, and LA gets fly quick, and it don't even seem fly to us. Like my daughter is a Uber taking fool.
Wow,
right? And it's like when we started, I remember I met this woman who drove me from LAX, and I just kind of bonded her real quick, and I was hitting these trouble spots where myself or my nanny couldn't get to her to pick her up. Mm. And I was like, hey, would you ever, if I called you, you know, on the side, because she worked the area, you know, consider picking up my daughter. I remember the first day when my daughter was 11 years old, you know, introducing her to Shima in Beverly Hills. I'm like, baby, sometimes daddy's not going to be able to pick you up and Shima's going to pick you up. And then it started with like, daddy, can I go to my friend's house? Can Shima take me?
Aww.
You know, and it started like that for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then... even that started, you know, breaking down a little bit. And then it was like, oh, I'm fine, daddy, if I can just take the Uber Black.
Oh, God.
So
my wife don't even take
so,
Uber Black.
So, okay.
I don't like Uber
Black. You know I go places with my stories. God, I don't meander. So I'm like, oh, okay. I've now actually conditioned her to think that it always needs to be an SUV picking her up. Now, I don't want to do that. I would like to pay the cheaper price. However, because I'm dealing with a minor, Uber Black does have different standards protocol for its protecting passengers. Her. And why would I not have want to afford that to a 12-year-old girl?
Well, you also are setting her up for the right man to take care of her. Like, the standard is black car when it's... and I appreciate
But I
that.
Think also the baseline that you're speaking that. To is... every parent wants to be able to take care of their child and provide for them and offer them more than maybe they once had. So
and a
you're
girl
doing
and
that.
Feel like she's safe.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even about luxury really, but but it was like with Shima to the Uber Black, it was like at no time in this city have I felt like my daughter wasn't safe because I couldn't give it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's everything to me. Really, I'm like I'm not saying I'm done with the business. I'm going to continue to work forever. Well, but it's just like I don't get on the sets anymore. And I'm like, I actually get more googly-eyed. I get more googly-eyed with the non-stars that I work with now. Mm-hmm. I'm like the cinematographer. That dude got nominated for this, or the costume, or all this. She won an Oscar. You know, like I get more googly eyed working with those people now because if I'm on a production that hired those cats, mm-hmm. we doing the filmmaking thing. We're not making content.
Yeah,
we're making art film. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
I am curious to know. Raven and I have talked a lot about her growing up and the kind of the scars that came from those experiences. Being 12 years old and then kind of growing up on that set, you went through puberty, for better lack of a word. And you talked about that woman telling you about, you know, this doesn't match your image and whatnot. What was it like having to kind of deal with your ego in certain moments of time when you're playing basically one of the most famous nerd characters, but then you're also like, I'm a guy, like that's not, I'm not that person, and you get kind of stuck or cast type or seen by other people only as that. Was that challenging?
As a Sagittarius, the thing I've really had to learn to control is my reaction, because that is our Achilles heel. We are so well-intentioned people, and we love other people. We vibrate. Look at her. She over there giggling and stuff. But it's almost like the devil knows the only way I can trip him up is to disrespect him. And so, especially when you're a teenager, especially when you're in college,
that's what I'm saying.
You get cats that want to just try you on the sly all the time because maybe they don't have any money. Maybe they're, you know, and maybe they forget about even money. They're just feeling like you're making them, your presence in a room is making them feel small.
Exactly. Right. That's the main thing.
So they got to just attack you on some level. You know what I'm saying? And it's like the Urkel thing for me. That's why the show needs to be set in the 90s, if it's ever to be made, to talk about what it was to play that character during the East-West rap battle and the gangster images that were being projected for as cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, reality was Tupac could be filming right next to us and actually come over and shoot hoops with me when he was doing Poetic Justice. The world wasn't seeing that, and that wasn't content for me to put up on Instagram back then. You know what I'm saying? And he wasn't that much bigger than me actually at the time. He was a small man.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I was very eager to play him. I thought I liked my chances. Mm-hmm. But you know, I've really learned as I've gotten older that my reaction is something I should be absolutely in control of. Yeah. And it's one thing to be smart, book smart. It's another thing to be street smart and have emotional maturity.
100%.
So
what I heard was when people came after you, you smiled and laughed because I got this check and I'm on television anyway.
You learned how to smile and laugh.
Understood.
That's what I heard. You learned it. I find it.
That's very. You're correct.
It's smart. Doyle. It's like you have to know where you sit in the scheme of things, no matter what that character is on
television.
But
that's also just human experience. Learning that like we're out of control of every single thing other than our reaction.
That's it.
That is literally it. And I think that's kind of where I was trying to understand your mental at that time, because, or go with my question to understand, because I think that
I would give into it back then.
I'm sure.
Made plenty of mistakes.
Yeah,
you know,
but to be that young, to then also have to battle with like, this is who I really am. This is what I'm really around. The world has no idea. I don't have a
black man.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine what some of that turmoil could have been for you.
But
at
it
times.
Also, but it, it, the turmoil happened. You did it 18,000 seasons, and then you move to Grown Ups.
Yeah.
Cuts. No, that was
Grown-Ups. I went to Grown Ups on UPN.
Yes. And how was that experience?
Grown Ups, man. Woo! I did 9 years of television for producers who got paid. They had proper budgets. And at least for 6 of those seasons, for what I could tell, they mattered to the network. I think they hid from us in the final three seasons to what degree that their relationship with the network was faltering. Mm. And but it didn't affect how we were treated on the set okay. or the accoutrement that we were afforded because of their budgets. Mm-hmm. You know, all filmmaking ain't the same. You know, you know, somebody else is told to make an entire movie in 8 days, and another movie gets, you know, 6 months. But they in the same theater back mm-hmm. then, and that's the way the game was played. So when I did Grown Ups, that was me learning in one season every single thing not to do. Mm. And I'm like, and the more I tried to affect, no, you're supposed to do it this way. I came off as a know-it-all 22-year-old, but I wasn't getting the acknowledgement of having done 200 episodes.
Years.
Instead, I was just a commodity with a familiar face that will make you the face of this nonsense that we're making, as opposed to being expected to really help make the product better.
State of Georgia.
And mm-hmm. and it was just like, you know, I remember we did 21 episodes. That's actually something I'm proud of with Grown Ups, because we should have been canceled almost immediately. And we had 13 different directors. Which is absurd. There's no continuity there.
Yeah.
A lot of the directors
What's
were
happening now.
A lot of the directors were friends of certain executives.
Of course.
Always affiliated with executives that were in charge.
Yeah. Did you find yourself directing when they weren't?
I had one terrible moment again, but I had a moment where this guy was disrespecting me as a talent on set, as a director. I always had to deal with my former executive producer as a kid, that if I didn't understand the way something should play, we could just get him on the red phone and he would come down from...
That's old school, boo.
Yeah, and he would come down from the writer's room and he would just block it with us and just play. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't contentious. He would just be like, yo, I don't get it. Yeah. Call Dave, right? Yeah. All right, take a five. Dave comes down. What's up, Jaleel? Boo. All right, this is the way I saw it when we wrote it. Jump on there. And my attitude with Dave was kind of playful, cocky. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, my job is to be funnier and quicker than Dave. So Dave could start showing me something. I'd be like, go back to the writer's room. I got it. I see what you want me to do. All right, mm-hmm. cool. So I tried that moment on Grown Ups one time where I said, listen, we don't need to be debating this as director and actor. Just get the dude who wrote it. But it was a simple bit that most people wouldn't think would create so much issue. Mm. A line had been written where my character and another character were all interacting by the front door. Mm-hmm. And then it said, Jay opens something and gets something out of the cupboard in the kitchen. Like, there was no way we could block it.
You're
it was
trying
like,
to do a stage wave, bro?
Yeah, it was like, dude, everything is taking place by the door, so how can I grab something by the kitchen at this line? Like, I would have to, you're gonna have to find a way to get me over there in the middle of this interaction that's gonna destroy everything that we're building.
You're
right
also
here.
The Rocketeer,
right? So
that's
I said he had written something that could not be stage blocked. Yeah. So I said, call him down, and I just sat in the chair, and he came down. And he was a little defensive. He didn't take it like Dave did. But like, oh, Jake. Dave, if he even realized that, would be like, oh, we made a mistake. This dude is trying to block it, and it's just he's just looking dumber and dumber with every suggestion. And it was just kind of like, I think you need to either set the scene in the kitchen or by the door. We're not going to get it both ways. And when you're 22 years old and you talk to a 40-year-old white man like that in... you know, early 2000s, word trickles out that, oh, you know, he's difficult.
Yeah.
And it's like, nah, I had become that much of a
veteran.
Of a student of my veteran. And so I wasn't even trying to belittle him. I'm trying to show this cat, like, I got you down here. But when it comes down to the set, now you on my territory and it's my job to get it
done.
Get it done at a high enough clip that an audience loves it. See, my whole thing has always been about the audience experience. I could give a shit about what my experience. That's why I got bumps and bruises, and I was willing to take the fall and bump into doors or any of that kind of stuff, because I wasn't performing from a place of ego. I was actually performing from a place of audience delight.
We had an episode a little while ago with a woman named Sashir, and our topic was what makes something funny. And what I said was,
we got a lot of different. We want to go back and forth. What, just educate people right here? No, we want to go back and forth. Let's just educate right here.
You first.
Okay. Alliteration makes something funny.
Ooh, tonality makes something funny.
Okay. Let's see. People getting smacked makes something funny.
It's always funny.
I was going to say gesture. Gestures. Knowing how to use your body.
Okay. Immediately. And I'm going to bring it back around, because the other thing that makes something funny is when your ego is out of the stage.
Yeah.
When you can get your bumps and bruises, when you can get smacked in the face and then not say, cut, I need to check my makeup.
Yeah, exactly.
That is,
you're fully immersed in that moment and everything else goes away. And that is when you hear some people talk about being the channel of something. You're truly in craft, you're truly in your art form, you're truly creating joy or movement or emotion in others. And that is this world of work that you guys do at its purest form. Now here's the deal, Julio. Usually on this show, what we do, but because we jumped right into conversation,
I love my wife.
We
so
go
much.
Into the pot and we pull out a topic.
Okay.
So we have a topic that we can quickly discuss for
that
a moment.
That really looks like Mrs. Potts from
it is.
From Beauty and the Beast.
And
this would be Chip.
Yeah.
But tell us what we were meant to be talking about today on Tea Time.
Okay.
There's so many topics in there, right?
I don't think my
hand. No, it's one randomized word just for Jaleel.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Pet peeves.
Do you have
any? I got a pet peeve.
Pet peeve.
Do you have a pet peeve?
I have a lot of pet peeves.
Let's start with the categories of pet peeves.
Oh, the categories.
Like a category. Let's start with like...
Pet peeve with strangers or with family?
Let's start strangers.
Strangers. Okay. Pet peeve. I have a pet peeve when people are in really close proximity to you and they think they're being slick taking your picture or just video recording you.
Oh my God, Jaleel.
You two are the same.
If you're doing it from a distance, I can't control you. Anything,
I hate that
it's
too.
Fine. But yeah, but still, you're from a distance. But I mean, like, you're in stupid proximity to me.
I'm
not gonna see. It's like,
oh, I hate that. I hate it.
And it's
I
like,
hate it too for you guys.
And it's like, you know, courtesy with certain people, me, goes a long way.
Honey, I'll make you delete it.
Oh.
I will. Oh no, I will. Hey, what you doing?
Yeah.
Let me see. Nothing. I said, I'm sorry. But
you'll also make me change positions. Like, we've been at dinners before where Raymond's like, get up. And I'm like, why? And she's like, because you're sitting where I'm sitting. And then she just gives him her back the whole time.
Yeah,
like,
because that's disrespectful. I don't do that to you. And I know that we're not going to get into it. Continue. Babes, pet peeves of stranger.
Pet peeve of stranger is man on airplane wearing flip-flops.
Wow.
Okay.
Why?
I can't. I don't want to see the foot. And
she just don't want to see the hair.
I just don't. And if it's close to me too, it's just not like, you don't wear flip flops to certain places. Hospitals, if you're an employee there. Airplanes, if you're traveling. And then like, and you just don't.
Okay.
I get that.
Okay. Yeah.
Pet peeves of a stranger. I would say, like, hospitality workers or people that work with like servers or things like that, that are very open with touching themselves or their nose when they think that we don't know that they're doing that.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot of scratching and touching.
Just this, like this thing and all of that. It's like...
And the handling of your food.
I don't like it.
Yes.
And I think it's just humans in general. We're actually really disgusting animals if you really like break us down. And so, I don't like us as...
I have another one, you guys.
As a
you have another
kingdom.
One?
Yes. You know what really is a pet peeve of mine?
What?
Nose whistlers at the movie theater.
Oh, my God.
It's the worst. Jaleel's like, what is that?
What is a
have
nose
you
whistle?
Ever heard your nose whistle? Like when you're breathing?
Oh, wow. Oh, you have really sensitive ears.
Like, really? So sensitive.
So, and I always end up sitting next. Yes. Me people, for sure.
Her people.
She's.
But how do you, like, go to sleep in a city like New York where there's noise
different.
All the time?
So, that is, like, background noise, and it's honking, yelling. It's different than one high-pitched nostril, just like.
See.
When you're trying to watch. Fucking Batman. Like, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't connect.
That doesn't connect.
Okay, pet peeve of family. Jaleel.
Oh, pet peeve of family. Unsolicited life advice.
Wow.
Period. I just think at a certain age, life advice needs to just... go stop. Away.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, it's like, come on, man. Like, you know what? Apply something to yourself. You know, I see a lot of things you could be working on. I can see a lot of things unsolicited.
That part.
Advice.
Okay, babes.
This is very specific.
To who?
To me and my family pet peeve, but it's with my father and I. And literally just calling him is my pet peeve because his phone.
Greg,
I don't know.
We bought him a phone, and I don't know what
my dad. He'd be so pissed. Good thing he doesn't listen to this or know that I even have a podcast. My dad is
under a rock.
No, doesn't understand this world at all. He's like, I don't do that. That's not my wheelhouse. I'm like, all right, sorry that it's not a television show.
Back to the
he has hearing aids that he recently started using. Okay. He's 75.
You gotta be sensitive to that.
Yes. No, I'm happy because now we're not just like, what? Huh? What? But he hooked it up through some fucking like weird Bluetooth thing through his phone so that when he answers now, it sounds like the man is in a cave at the most high pitched. Babes, describe it. I don't even know. It's horrible, Jaleel.
So all of your pet peeves are associated with sound.
Yeah.
And auditory.
You have
sound and smell.
You have auditory disorders.
I do.
She actually does.
I do. I have auditory sensitivities. But and you know what's so funny is that the other one is my mom's fucking keys jingle jangle around her neck. Oh my God, I'm having such realizations
right
now.
I'll go to my pet.
I think the hearing aid needs to be bought for you.
I know. I need loops. It's called an earplug.
I bought her loops.
I don't need any aid. Okay. I hear everything. Like Wes clicking on the thing, I hear it.
I hear it too, but that's.
We love you.
That's wild. I didn't hear none of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, smell and hearing and that. Those are
no senses.
My senses are actually heightened because of television. We'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
Family pet peeve, babes.
Oh, family pet peeve. When they refuse to accept the fact. Oof, I'm writing a book. I shouldn't say that right now.
I know. Everything now is
everything's
about the
a
book.
Chapter now.
Yeah, everything is a chapter.
In the book.
Everything.
Everything's in the book. Isn't everything in the book for you?
Not everything.
Almost.
Listen to this. Should this be one of the titles of her chapter? They came for the boobs and stayed for the comedy.
It's a long chapter, but a long...
Why you saying the boobs are perky? What do you mean they're not that long?
That's a pretty good one, no?
It is. My favorite chapter is entitled Little Shit. I have a chapter called Entitled Little Shit.
I love that.
Yeah. It revolves around
me
going...
Who called you that?
No, I called myself.
Oh. Hilarious.
It revolves around a story about me going home during college, during Thanksgiving. To just have Thanksgiving with my parents, and my dad found an old VHS tape of myself, our whole entire family actually staying atop the Plaza Hotel for the launch of the Urkel doll.
Oh,
and
bring my Urkel doll over here.
The experience was so grand. My dad rented a old school VHS.
Oh my! Remember that
recorder. Because we didn't believe anybody would believe what we were living at the time. And when I look back on the tape, you know, I'm not fun to watch myself at the time. Now, I don't feel like
I had a lot going on.
I don't feel like I was always this way. No. I wasn't always. It's just that on this particular trip, I was officially being spoiled to a disgusting degree. I mean, like the Yankees had sent me stuff. The Knicks had sent me stuff. Like I was walking in the doors and it was like, right this way, Mr. White. Everybody's calling me Mr. White and I'm 13, 14. So it was going in my head in that moment. I wasn't always that way. I'm not, no. But there were, this trip was just opulent. And I was a kid doing too much. And quite frankly, my parents didn't even really know how to parent me right there in this moment. because they were equally in awe. So I was watching their parenting falter as well. Because they didn't know what was too much anymore. It's almost like your mama saying, hey, no sweets before dinner, and somebody just wheels in an entire cake in your image. In your image.
You mean all my
birthdays? Jaleel, we brought this just for you, just for joining us for no particular reason. And it's Mom, can I have some of my own cake that's in my image?
Welcome.
No sweets before dinner? Really? So it was like we were set up to fail that weekend.
That's a lot. That's gotta crazy. Love it.
Pet peeve about being a child star.
You go first. I gotta think.
I can't even participate. Thanks, babe. I'll just
You're
do
the
this.
Waltons. Babes, you're on the Waltons.
I love that it still works.
I love this also.
You gonna sign it for us?
Of course. Appreciate it. Anything for me.
Okay, pet peeve.
You're gonna sign my doll? Look at me getting all excited. Okay, pet peeve from being on the Waltons.
Yeah.
I'll tell you first. So
you're not gonna inquire about why she was on the Waltons?
He doesn't care. He's just rolling with it. He's like,
I'm rolling with it. I didn't see the episode, so I'm like it's
gonna... I think during my fitting. It was, well, this was...
Do you remember it? I mean, the Waltons is like ages ago. Like you had to have been like two, like three.
You know what I remember? The director continuing to tell me to smile over and over. And I, that was a pet peeve. Because I was like, I am over smiling at these... Yes. This woman had
you
to...
You haven't even smiled much here. So I could see how that would have annoyed you as a toddler.
It was very annoying. I don't enjoy smiling that regularly. And that was my biggest pet peeve as a child star for a week and a half was being told to smile on the regular.
That's probably why masculinity
I never booked again.
Got it. Doesn't do much on cue. All right.
Nothing on cue. Nothing on cue. Okay. Pet peeve of being a child star is that at a younger age, I knew that I was smarter than most adults.
Is that a pet peeve or like wild?
Well, I think that's like a pet peeve in the sense of I'm mad at myself because I see some people speak out and I never did because I knew that it was disrespectful.
Yeah, you got to stay in child's place.
Yeah.
And the pet peeve was for those. That's the backstory. So the pet peeve is adults telling me things that were blatantly incorrect. But I had to take it
because you were a child
and do it
because you're a child.
When I knew you are incredibly wrong,
you're wildly wrong.
You are wildly wrong.
That's like way deeper than a pet peeve, though.
What is that, hatred?
That to me is the duplicity of having to live the life as the child, but then you're also completely adultified because you're oftentimes supporting your family, you're working with other adults, and it's a complete mixed message. That is like a deep-seated
trauma.
Yeah.
I'm writing
a
book.
It's a parentification of a child in a work setting.
So it's not a pet peeve?
It's just way deeper than that, but it can also be a pet peeve, Jaleel.
My pet peeve is the randomness who gets labeled a former child star.
Ooh.
The randomness.
It's very random, and it's not... it's not consistent. I'll give you a good example. You know, for all intents and purposes, he's Harry Potter. But Daniel Radcliffe, the actor, has probably benefited from far better representation from day one. And so because of it, even though he was Harry Potter, you'll never see him in a discussion about former child stars.
Correct. That's so interesting.
Ever. And
Jodie Foster either.
And it starts with, but what it is that it's the thing that I want to let people understand. We might be the face of something. I might be the face of Family Matters. I might be the face of TGIF. But really all we are is we're the visible portion of a team. And you're really kind of only as good as the people you work for.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you're going to be branded as they're branded. So if... You know, in that circumstance, and I brought him up. I've never met the young man at all. He's a fantastic performer. So I always like to speak respectfully of somebody.
I didn't like his last piece
of
work.
I've never
personally.
Met. All right. Yeah, you shit
personally,
on him
I didn't
on
really like
time.
The last
You're not
piece
shit
of Daniel.
On him
I'm just
while
saying,
I'm
I saw him
here,
in Equius. I saw him naked on Broadway. It changed my mind.
It changed my mind.
I was disturbed.
Well, somebody knew on his team that if he whipped it out on Broadway, he would be nominated for
awards. Tony. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm like, hey, if somebody told me I was going to get nominated in my 20s, if I performed.
I was going to say something bad. I'd be like, come on now.
And you know
a
what
black
he did.
Man at Equius. People would be pissed.
Maybe I'd have stood up there too and let them know what I'm working with.
He did what you said most people do, though. He went from one extreme of being the Harry Potter little nerdy dude to then being, I'm a grown man with a dick, and here it is.
Right.
And it's what you say Miley did and blah, blah, blah.
But it was framed in such a way to be accepted.
Palatable.
It wasn't, we're not talking OnlyFans here. We're not talking about some salacious pictures on Instagram.
It's artistic.
Right? This is artistic.
It's artistic.
The way it's framed.
Yeah.
You know, that can be frustrating a bit when you see people, because basically anybody who's good at what we do, you've been doing it since you were young. Leo's been doing it since he was young.
Oh, yeah.
Toby's been doing it. I used to go on auditions opposite those guys.
He doesn't talk about child stardom at all.
They don't have to. It's all about the circles you run in and how you're promoted.
I think it's also, though.
That's such an interesting point, Jaleel.
I think it's also, though, too, there are some people that their child stardom things really made such a huge shift in culture.
Like Macaulay Culkin?
Like a Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, but... But Harry Potter?
No. But let me say
different.
Something else. It's different. It's different. Because even
Break
Macaulay
it down
Culkin...
To me.
I will. Even Macaulay Culkin, right? So we had never read Home Alone. Okay, I think that Daniel Radcliffe and Harry Potter is a different scenario because Harry Potter was huge before the movie.
It's like a child in a movie versus a child star.
Not as interesting.
You know what I mean? Macaulay Culkin.
Oh.
That's a different human being. He made titles and movies that no one could sit in his place in to make. Anybody could have sat in Daniel Radcliffe's place. No offense, bruh. But you know what I mean? Like, the movie made you.
The story
made you. You made Urkel.
Urkel.
I made Raven. Macaulay Culkin made McAllister.
There tends to be a little bit of resentment sometimes. We're thankful that you made this fly as high as it's gone. Oh, 200 million, 300 million, you know, juggernaut in syndication. But, you know, you are a kid.
Yeah. Most definitely. And
right?
Yeah.
And it's like,
that's her. That's
and you can feel it from certain adults especially.
Mm-hmm. And it's scary when you become a teen, because it's really important in order to bridge that gap between child stardom and teen stardom to adult stardom, you need a couple of things. And it's so sad, and I want somebody to prove me wrong, but it's a sex appeal that's needed.
Yep.
It's a team
that's
needed, and it's a time, a little bit of space, to be able to reinvent yourself to come out again. And it's sad because I'm actually going to put it in that order. It's really sad because if they don't see you, you have to be...
The sex appeal got to be there first.
It has to be there first. If they don't see you transition into a wantable teenager, you're not going to make that move. Or it's really weird.
Not as deep, and it's layered, and it's complex. And that's why it's like I said, listen, when you start diving into it like that and dissecting it and unpacking it, you know, you have... For me, I enjoy life most when I simplify things, like right down to the simplest thing. It's like, okay, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a provider at this point. And at this point, I choose to be a source of inspiration for anybody who choose to walk in a similar path.
Yeah.
Or just even on a human level. I mean, I'll jump in the car with my driver, and he's talking about something going on in his house. He's like, man, what do you think? I'm like, I didn't even offer any advice to this man. For some reason, this man feels compelled to ask me what I think about something.
It's your star.
Like, so I just, you know.
You got
like,
a light, Jaleel.
I like inspiring people. And if you do want my help, I like being aligned.
Yes.
That's the thing where I try to tell people, I say, listen, I love team sports. I love team activities. I loved basketball so much as a kid because I got off on passing. Mm-hmm. Magic Johnson was my favorite player. I recognized John Stockton was on his heels. You know, I loved setting somebody up just as much as I enjoyed being set up. And that's really what comedy is. You know, mm-hmm. you know the most important aspect of comedy actually rarely is the joke. It's the reaction.
Yeah.
It's the reaction. Yeah. It's not even the setup.
Right?
It's the person reacting
It's
after.
The person reacting after who dictates how much we need to be laughing.
And that was the difference they said for me. They always kept a camera on me for That's So Raven because I always reacted.
Oh, yeah. Your reaction, your face.
And
yeah.
like, I have face a is wild. I can't not react.
Yeah. Yeah.
But same. It's been watered down. Our medium, yeah. I feel, has changed from when we were on it and the education we learned. It's been watered down and watered down. And I sometimes go on sets now. There's a few of us out there still from the purity of, you know, setup, joke, reaction. But a lot of people, it's like, I need the joke. I need the page count. Yeah. I need to make sure I'm seen the most. And it's just kind of, that's a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, it's huge. You know, the sad part about sitcom, why I really feel like it's dead.
It's not.
It's dead.
No, I got things to do, Jaleel. It's not dead.
I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. I would love to see it come back. Are you kidding me? I would love to see it come back. But I'm going to tell you the number one thing that hurts a new sitcom in this day and age from taking off. Hmm. You can't roast each other.
Yeah.
That is the core tenet of sitcom.
Yeah.
All characters, for the most part, came into a room to roast somebody or get roasted for entering or wearing an outfit, being too big, being too small, being too short.
Wow.
I mean, I'm like, Drew Carey was built on just the relationship between him and Mimi. What about Fred Sanford and Wanda? George and Wheezy. I mean, that's... Even myself, I mean, Steve would roast Waldo for being too dumb.
Yeah.
And now you, because of social media, you know, and we were always, all of our characters were a reflection of people out there in the real world.
Yes, sir.
So now people have the access to say, if you said that to that character, I feel like you said that to me.
Oh my God, Jaleel.
Whoa!
Yeah,
that is a fundamental change in the audience program interaction.
That's
I'm like, I'm just being real with you. Like, I want to see a show, a bullpen kind of show, newsroom, office,
then watch
whatever.
Miss Pat.
It's that, but where not
they
even
just frying each other. But again, we do that in Black culture. So Black culture, we preserve what it is to roast each other.
Yeah.
Nobody's taking that from us.
We have thick skin. We can handle it.
Yeah, that's a part of our culture that nobody's taking that from
us.
Yeah. But add the profanity and it doesn't translate.
Yeah.
So you're not going to see Miss Pat in Germany. You're not going to see Miss Pat in France.
Well, I want everybody to watch Miss Pat here. Whoever's watching it.
Episodes.
It's, oh my God, I love it.
I've done two
but
episodes.
What Jaleel just said is so correct. And it's also a reflection of the time, because when we were talking about whatever we were talking about right before you said what you said, I was thinking to myself, part of the problem with kids in sitcoms today and why you don't see what happened on Family Matters, why you don't see what happened on That's So Raven, is because it's now so cushioned and so protected because you guys suffered. There were issues and things that weren't in place that didn't protect you appropriately. But from that, if you were to, I guess, call any silver lining out, it's that the caliber of show, funny, and talent that got to come through was unmatched.
Comedy is best when it comes from pain.
Yeah.
Pure and simple. The funniest things come from...
Comedy is tragedy. Something bad happened to somebody.
And now, in today's world...
You can't do that.
It will not be... It can't get by because of HR and because of the, you know, darkness that was there before, but wow.
I got a note once... Oh, not me. The writer at a show that I was on got a note, and they said, I can't... With your little, what did I say? Narrow behind. I said it. They were like, oh, you're skinny shaming her. I said, what?
Yeah.
I said, actually, that's a comment because I'm supposed to whoop that ass later. Yeah. Like, that's a narrow behind. I can't hit it with a belt. It had nothing to do with the skinny. What? Yeah. And that is it. And I was like, oh, got it. And I never, that is why it's dead.
That's why it's dead. It's dead.
It's different. Let's not.
It's different.
I
direct. It's really different.
I will tell you this. You know, unfortunately, because everything, every needle is moved by money. If somebody powerful enough, if somebody like a Ricky Gervais or something were to say, I'm going to do an old school sitcom, right? And it started especially in Britain. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But America, sure. We love what the Brits do. Yeah, once, we they, do. Once they prove do it, that it works, yeah. Now we can do our American version of it, definitely. Right? If somebody like him were to be like, I'm going to do an old school like Benny Hill or right? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or I'm going to do a sitcom that's like Mary Tyler Moore or mm-hmm. something like that where we are just frying each other, right? If and it starts making a lot of money and getting really popular,
it would be
then
bad.
That's when you would see it come back.
Yeah,
you know, if Dave Chappelle got to apologize, we all fucked.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
Or Julia? Will Smith.
Let's toast. Well,
let's toast.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I want to toast the sitcoms coming back one day,
honey.
To somebody like a Ricky Gervais or a Dave saying, "I'm just going to offend everybody and make all the money."
That needs to happen. That needs to happen. I miss that.
You know, it's because it's funny how they grandfather it in. You know, like. South Park offends everybody. Woo! It's like they work to offend everybody, but they're geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
And but they're grandfathered in.
Yeah.
So that's considered classic now. And if you...
Simpsons.
And Simpsons, exactly. Those shows...
But it's also cartoons.
Ah, so exactly. So there's nobody to blame but a writer you can't see.
Exactly.
It's amazing. Like it's,
and they're yellow.
So it's so wild.
They're yellow. Those yellow people are insulting each other.
That's different.
Today... We're toasting to my inner child who gets to have her Urkel doll. Signed.
Oh my goodness.
By you, Jaleel.
Oh my god.
Uh-huh. Make sure you don't put to Miranda because then it's worth more on eBay.
Oh.
That you're so smart. You really are smart.
Well, I'm not trying to sell
it. I gotta help you though. I mean, let me help you something. See, I'm gonna life help you. From this day forward, stop letting mofos know how smart you are. No, I'm serious. Because I'm serious. It does not play to your advantage in life. You know, for the little blonde black girl with the beanie on, it'd be like, I'm smarter than all y'all. You don't think it. And you're true. I'm here to say it. Like, she has been a freaking whip. I've been watching your butt since you've been performing this big and hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Thank you.
And I've seen the 900-year-old soul inside of you, but sometimes you just got to let people think that you're only 100 years old.
I'll try my best. I'll learn from you.
All right.
Yeah. I have to get
don't
up there.
Don't devalue the Urkel doll by putting your funky Miranda name on it.
You know what? Can I tell you a story? I have a first edition Harry Potter signed by J.K. Rowling. J.K. does not personalize, and she said, to Miranda, I met your dad. No, it's even more valuable.
How is it more
because
valuable?
Because J.K. never personalized.
Yes.
Oh, that's fair.
So
in that
situation, it's different.
And it's that's to true. Miranda, I met your dad! Love J.K. Rowling. That's like very... So maybe if he wrote, to Miranda, I met you. Something.
It's happening!
I'm so excited.
There you go. I did do that.
Oh my God. You did do that!
Thank you so much, Jaleel, for blessing us with your energy and your light. Thank you so much for paving the way.
And thank you for being on my talk show.
Tell me about your talk show.
What is this talk show?
It's the best talk show in the world as far as I'm concerned because you don't have to be on the show. People are busy and I don't want to bother you to actually come in studio and be on my show. So I you played ball, and I loved it. You trusted me. Mm-hmm. I said, Raven, I just want to ask you one question and answer it how you want to. And, you know, Raven's sassy, so she answered it how she wanted to. And I said, all right, cool, that's it. She was like, that's it? And I was like, yeah, I'm not even going to use the video of you. I don't need it.
Wait, what video? What do you mean? You can catch this on your platform.
Hilarious. And we won't blame you for saying the best podcast ever when it's called Tea Time. Don't worry, Jaleel.
Sorry.
He'll can change it. So
no, we can't.
Turn the sound off really fast.
That's hilarious.
Oh, we have musical guests. Seal.
I'm dead.
So if you ever have anything to promote, feel free
to
come on my show, but don't come on my show.
Could you do me a favor and tell us?
Can we promote Tea Time?
Yes, we can promote Tea Time.
Great. Please tell us, you have a talk show that's on what platform?
Instagram?
It's called Just a Minute, and I put it on YouTube. It's on TikTok. It's on my Instagram, at Jaleel White. And it's just my way of being a talk show host when I really know I don't have time to be a talk show host. But it's fun.
It's hilarious, Jaleel.
It's fun. It's more covers the internet And I we try to keep the episodes around a minute.
Smart.
And Growing Up Urkel is out now everywhere.
Growing Up Urkel is out everywhere. I do the audio for Growing Up Urkel.
I was just gonna ask you, yes.
I'm also in Skeleton Crew, which is a Star Wars adventure.
Cool.
Starts December 2nd on Disney Plus. I play a pirate. Pew, 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 pew.
Pew, 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 pew.
Take my job very seriously, attacking these kids. that was a lot of fun. I got a chance to work with some incredible directors.
Amazing.
That's how I'm going to end my year with a real bang, holiday bang. I can't wait to see it. I mean, they spent a lot of money.
Yay. Yeah, well, congrats, Jaleel, and thank you for coming through and talking to us. It's been really nice.
Nah, you guys are the best. Come on.
We love you.
You guys are like aunts that are going, but just buy me stuff. Yeah. Come on, go buy me stuff. Let's go. Let's go to a store and buy me some stuff.
Let's go. We'll feed you.
I'll feed you.